So this sermon I'm going to dedicate it to the preacher who preached Abraham in Love. His name was Charles Jennings. I think most of you know Charles. So it's Charles Jennings who inspired this sermon. If we all stand, we'll read Obadiah 18. I think everyone knows Obadiah 18. It's one of the great sermons on the world. I don't know what a Judeo-Christian does with this verse. They probably ignore it. Obadiah 18, and the house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, and the house of Esau for stubble, and they shall kindle in them and devour them, and there shall not be any remaining of the house of Esau, for the Lord has spoken it. You may be seated. Thank you very much. Before I begin the sermon, I'll have a little bit in the news. Who is this? Is it a he or she or an it? Her name is Rachel Levin, openly transgendered health official, was sworn in as a four-star admiral of the U.S. Public Health Services Commission Corps. He, she, or it is, of course, Jewish. He started out as a boy and turned into a transvestite woman in 2012. It's interesting that this, whatever she is, this it person and General Miley attended the same high school, which was Belmont High School. Well, that's the news I have going on in the world today, upside down world. Now I'll get to my sermon. Number one, who was former President of the United States Bill Clinton's father? Many say that it was William Jefferson Blythe III of Sherman, Texas. He died in a traffic accident a few months before his son was born. His widow, Virginia, moved to Hope, Arkansas to live with her parents. She gave birth there to William Jefferson Blythe IV, the future president of the United States. When William Blythe IV was 4 years old, his mother married Roger Clinton. To show his support to his stepfather, the future president eventually changed his name to William Jefferson Clinton when he was a teenager. But there are a few historians who say that Bill Clinton's real father was not William Blythe III, but Dr. George Wright of Hope, Arkansas. They say that Bill's mother, Virginia, had to make up the lie about William Blythe being her son's dad, because Dr. George Wright was a married man. So which one is Bill Clinton's real father? Number two, who was former President of the United States Barack Hussein Obama's father? Barack Hussein Obama was a mongrel. His mother was Jewish. Her name was Stanley Ann Dunham. Many believe that Obama Sr., who was from Kenya in Africa, was his father. He met Ann at the University of Hawaii, where they both were students. Obama Sr. said that he was divorced, but that wasn't true. He was still married with his wife in Kenya and had two children. After a couple of dates, Dunham became pregnant. His father was basically gone from the household, and Obama did not see him after he was 10 years old. A few say that it wasn't Obama Sr. who was his father, but Frank Marshall Davis, a Negro who was an avowed communist. That would make both Obama's mother and father strong, active communists. So was Obama's mother's father and mother. Davis was Obama's mentor throughout the years. So who was Barack's real father? Who was the former President of the United States Abraham Lincoln's father? Where was he born? Most believe that Honest Abe's father was Thomas Lincoln. His mother was Nancy Hanks, and he was born in Hardin County, Kentucky on February 12, 1809. Abe's mother, Nancy Hanks, came to North Carolina as a young girl with her mother and sister from the state of Virginia. They lived in Bostic, North Carolina, near Puzzle Creek. When financial problems plagued the family, Nancy's mother bound her out as a servant to Abraham Inlow's family. Abraham Inlow was a well-known figure in the community. The master of the house took advantage of his servant girl, and she became pregnant. Mrs. Enlow disliked the servant girl, Nancy, no doubt for her sexual relationship with Mr. Enlow. After she became pregnant, she told her husband to get rid of her. So Abraham Enlow sent Nancy Hanks to nearby Jonathan Creek and hired a family to take care of her. It was there that Nancy had delivery of her son, whom she named Abraham, the same first name as his father. After the birth, Nancy left North Carolina and moved to Kentucky, where she married Thomas Lincoln. Thomas was said to have received a wagon, horses, and some money for taking Nancy Hanks along with her son Abraham in marriage. This marriage is said to have been arranged by Abraham Enlow, who paid Thomas Lincoln off because rumors were spreading in the community. Abraham Enlow didn't wish for his reputation to be slandered. Abraham Lincoln's actual father was the connecting force between Nancy Hanks and Thomas Lincoln, so that both his reputation and Nancy's life were no longer scrutinized. It is reported that Abraham Enlow was Jewish. So who is Abraham Lincoln's real father? I got some things here. This is a stone marker. The rock has inscribed on it, traditional birthplace of Abraham Lincoln, the 16th president of the United States, 1 mile to the east. It's got an arrow pointing that way. Rutherford County, North Carolina, Historical Society erected 2001. Here's an original oil painting by John Aykroyd. It's currently on display at the museum. It's a picture of Abraham Enlow's cabin. The Abraham Enlow cabin was the former home of Nancy Hanks, mother of Abraham Lincoln. Nancy birthed her black-haired baby boy named Abraham about mid-February 1805. The Abraham Enlow cabin and farm are located on the hill above Puzzle Creek, some 4 miles northwest of the Bostic Lincoln Center. The cabin was described as located between Cherry Mountain and the Concord Baptist Church, and I got a map. And here's the Bostic Lincoln Center, where's the museum. You can go there, let them know you're coming, and they'll give you a tour. You can go up to Lincoln Hill and see the cabin and so forth. What does it matter? Many Christians, including a few in Christian identity, would say, what difference does it make? It doesn't make any difference in my way of thinking whose father the above three presidents had. Who cares who their fathers were? Some historians even say that Lincoln possessed Melungeon roots, that is, was a mixed breed of Sephardic Jews and Christian Spanish explorers who settled in the Americas in the 16th century. Who cares? But should a Christian care? Pastor Ramsey changed his last name from Ramsey to Sullivan and then back to Ramsey. Why? Because his real parents were named Ramsey. Both parents died when he was just a young boy. His female relative, who he was living with after his parents died, became married to a Jewish man by the name of Sullivan. Both he and his brother changed their last name to Sullivan. It wasn't until later in life that Everett changed back his name to Ramsey. Living under his stepfather, Sullivan was a horrible, disastrous, anti-Christ experience. The number of Jews in America from 1805 or 1809, the year of Lincoln's birth, till the end of the war between the North and the Confederate States of America, 1865, increased significantly. Its population rose from just a couple of thousand to over 200,000. That is almost 1,000 times increase. But it was still only 1% of the nation's population. But according to the Jewish website, and I give it all out there, you can look it up if you want, it says that Lincoln was the only American president not to have declared himself a member of any particular religious faith. He was neither reared in a church, nor did he ever belong to a church. But this Jewish website has a very interesting take on where Lincoln was from. His father, or stepfather, depending on which version you believe, was also Jewish. Here's the quote from the Jewish website. Quote, "The town of Lincoln in eastern England, where his ancestors came, has an interesting Jewish history. A Jewish community was established there in 1159. During Crusader riots, the sheriff of Lincoln saved the Jews by giving them official protection. St. Hugh, the great bishop of Lincoln, taught love of Jews to his parishioners." Now, this was against what the Bible teaches. "His death was marked by an official period of mourning among Lincoln's Jews. Rabbi Joseph of Lincoln was a scholar mentioned in the Talmud. Aaron of Lincoln was a financier whose operations extended all over the country. In the year 1255, Lincoln's Jews were accused of ritual murder. 91 Lincoln Jews were sent to London for trial, and 18 were executed. Notwithstanding, the Lincoln Jewish community flourished into 1290, when they were forcibly expelled by edict. Most Jewish historians assume that all the Jews of Lincoln left in 1290. But could it be possible that some remained, practicing their Judaism in secret, passing the family secret from generation to generation? The more we learn of the secret life of Spanish Jewish following the expulsion of 1492, the more we must at least consider the possibility of the same thing occurring elsewhere. When Abraham Lincoln was assassinated, whole Jewish community sat Shiva, which is a week-long mourning period. Rabbis all over the country utilized the fallen president. Rabbi Isaac Meyer Weiss, his real name was Weiss, was America's outstanding Jew and leading rabbi during the 19th century. His major achievements were the establishment of the Union of American Hebrew Congregations in 1873, the Hebrew Seminary called the Hebrew Union College, which is located in Cincinnati, which is the college that I visited one time and got information from, and the Central Conference of American Rabbis in 1889. The man who created Reform Judaism in this country began his eulogy with this word. This is what he said about Lincoln's death. Quote, "Brethren, the lamented Abraham Lincoln believes himself to be bone of our bone and flesh from our flesh. He supposed himself to be a descendant of Hebrew." When he says Hebrew, he means Jewish parentage. "He said so in my presence." This was written by Rabbi Jeff Kahn, Temple Har Shalom. P.S. Abraham Lincoln was Jewish. Unquote. Lincoln's friends. The extent of Lincoln's relationships consisted of five Jews as friends. Anybody here have five Jewish friends? With another 14 Jews as associates and supporters, with another 55 Jews as acquaintances, and with another 48 Jews as recipients of appointments and pardons. So Abraham Lincoln had 120 Jews as friends or associates or acquaintances or recipients of appointments or pardons during his lifetime. Abraham Lincoln is known more for his preserving the Empire of America and his ending of quote-unquote slavery, and is less known for his championing of the rights of Jewish Americans, even when it was difficult and unfashionable to do so. In his surviving letters, Lincoln mentions God over 420 times, yet remarkably, never refers directly to his divine Son, Jesus the Christ. Unlike many 19th century American Christians, Abraham Lincoln considered many Jews his friends. One of the first Jews whom Lincoln had befriended was Julius Hammerslaw. When Lincoln was elected to the Illinois State Legislature in 1834, he met Julius and took the unusual step of socializing with the young merchant. Hammislaw served as the president of the first synagogue of Springfield, Illinois. Lincoln treated Hammislaw as an equal. When he died in 1908, Hammislaw's obituary described him as a, quote, warm friend of Abraham Lincoln, unquote. One of Lincoln's closest friends was Abraham Jonas, a Kentucky merchant, lawyer, Freemason, and a politician who supported and encouraged Lincoln for most of his life. Jonas was the very first public figure to encourage Lincoln to run for president. He was also the only person Lincoln referred to as, quote, one of my most valued friends, unquote. There's the picture of Abraham Jonas. Born into an Orthodox Jewish family in England, Jonas moved to Cincinnati, right across the river, with his brother. His brother was the first Jewish resident of Cincinnati when he was a teenager in 1819. The pair, he and his brother, established Ohio's first synagogue and were members of the Freemasons. He soon moved to Kentucky and organized a Masonic lodge there. He then moved to Illinois and organized another Masonic lodge. And it was Abraham Jonas who first invited Lincoln to debate Senator Stephen A. Douglas in what would become the famous Lincoln-Douglas debate. Jonas is credited with securing Lincoln's nomination for the presidency and campaigned heavily on his behalf. It is highly unlikely that Lincoln would ever have become president were it not for the efforts of his Jewish friend, Jonas. Lincoln personally ordered the release of one of Jonas's son, Confederate Charles Jonas, from a Union prisoner of war camp to be at his father's bedside before he died. Another Jewish friend of Lincoln's was the chiropodist Issachar Zachari. Besides successfully tending to his many bunions and corns, Zachari was also enlisted as being a spy for the North. Get this. He even had a quote-unquote, secret meeting with his fellow Jew, Judah Benjamin, of the Confederate forces in 1863. What was that all about? And Zachariah labored in private to turn out Jewish voters for the president. As the War of Northern Aggression raged, Lincoln recruited Jewish military and civilian leaders to help lead the fight. In addition to officers, President Lincoln also appointed about 50 Jews to be quartermasters, overseeing housing, supplies, transportation, and clothing for the troops. Simon Wolfe was a Jewish lawyer whose family had moved to the United States from Germany and became one of Lincoln's many Jewish friends. Wolfe just received word of a Jewish soldier in the Union Army who was about to be shot for desertion. He paid a visit to Lincoln to plead the soldier's case and saved his life. The soldier's life was spared, but he was killed 3 years later at the Battle of Cold Harbor. Henry Rice knew Lincoln when he was an attorney in Illinois and several times recommended Lincoln's services to others. Lincoln remained grateful, and he and Rice maintained a friendship. Rice, having gone into the textile business, offered to make Lincoln's inauguration suit. And Lincoln, in turn, endorsed Rice for a position of being a sutler, a civilian who was authorized to operate a store on or near a military camp, post, or fort. He, Henry Rice, is credited, along with Abraham Jonas, with helping Lincoln realize that Jews despite the widespread prejudice against them, were just the same as everyone else. After Lincoln's assassination, his family settled in Frankfurt, not Kentucky, Frankfurt, Germany, because of the reduced finances. Mary Todd, where was Mary Todd born? Lexington, Kentucky. She was very wealthy. Very interesting story. They even put her in the insane asylum for 3 months. Anyway, she's in Germany. While in this condition, the Jew, Henry Sigelman, befriended them and interested Senator Sumner in legislation to grant Mrs. Lincoln a pension. On receiving the pension, Mrs. Lincoln returned to America, and thanking Sumner for his efforts, she remarked that her husband's Jewish friends had remained loyal to her and the children even after his death. How about this one? At the start of the War of Northern Aggression, 30 chaplains served in the American Army. None of them were Jewish, since federal law stipulated that chaplains must be Christian. No Muslim, no Jewish, had to be Christian. In 1861, one heavily Jewish Pennsylvania regiment tried to circumvent this rule by appointing a young Hebrew teacher from Philadelphia named Michael Allen as a volunteer Jewish chaplain. Allen's appointment sparked a vigorous backlash, and he was soon forced to resign. Cincinnati's Isaac Mayer Wise, her real name Wise, who led a Reformed congregation, called on Jews across the country to petition Congress from all parts of the United States. A Jewish communal organization sent Rabbi Arnold Fischel to the nation's capital to lobby for Jewish chaplains in person. Lincoln himself went to work lobbying Congress to allow Jewish chaplains. He faced strong opposition from who? From some Christian denominations. But eventually succeeded in making law that for the first time in history that non-Christians could be in the post. Lincoln approved the first Jewish chaplain in 1862. Among the millions who mourned the 16th president, many Jewish congregations held special services and composed prayers for their beloved president. When Lincoln's coffin was paraded through the streets of New York, a local newspaper estimated that 7,000 Jews came out to pay their respects. In Springfield, Illinois, where Lincoln was buried on May 4, 1865, his old friend Julius Hammerslaw closed his store and displayed a portrait of Lincoln with a decoration that capped it, which so many felt, quote, "Millions bless thy name," unquote. Today, in addition to the many monuments to Abraham Lincoln in the United States, a beautiful street in central Jerusalem is named for Lincoln, a fitting tribute to the Jewish people's gratitude to a president who championed and defended American Jews. And there's the street sign. I'll now tell you a little bit about Smoky Row. Does anybody know where Smoky Row is? I never heard any of this in school. Smoky Row. Well, before the war between the two nations, prostitution was rampant in the North. New York City sex trade expanded during the war in the 1860s. There was about 600 brothels. Washington, D.C. was a bustling center of prostitution during the war, too. In 1862, Washington, D.C. had 450 registered brothels. While officers as well as soldiers frequented prostitutes, some officers became alarmed at the toll venereal disease was taking on the troops. There were recorded 73,382 cases of syphilis and 109,397 cases of gonorrhea. That's recorded. 1 in 11 Union soldiers were infected with venereal disease during the war. That means that about 1/4 or more of all Northern soldiers were involved with prostitution. Venereal disease was the worry of Union officers in Nashville, Tennessee, right where you grew up. I don't know if you know that. You tell me after service if you knew about this. Northern Army had taken control of Nashville, Tennessee in 1862. Beginning in the mid-1863s, they attempted to eject the prostitutes from the city. In early July 1863, the Army forced Nashville's prostitutes to board the steamship Idaho to be shipped north. But Louisville, Kentucky, Cincinnati, Ohio, and other Kentucky riverport towns refused to lift the prostitutes off the ship. The steamship went back to Nashville with the same number of passengers it had when it left. As a result, a plan was devised to ease the venereal disease problem in Nashville. Prostitutes were ordered to receive medical examinations and be licensed before plying their trade. Smokey Row, in what is now downtown Nashville, went from an uncomfortable city secret to a thriving red light district with some 1,500 prostitutes. Many of the women were Southerners who became prostitutes to earn a living after their male-female members went to war. The street was about 3/4 of a mile long. And every house or shanty on both sides was a house of ill fame. They say that Smokey Row killed more soldiers than the war. That was missing from my history book, too. In a time before modern condoms and antibiotics, venereal disease was both seen as an inevitable consequence of war and was the fault of prostitutes. Who knows how many men were being unfaithful to their wives and how many women were being unfaithful to their husbands. General Orders number 11. Maybe some of you heard of this. In the late 1862, as Ulysses Grant... And Grant is on, which one of our dollar bills is Grant on? 50? Grant prepared to move his army southward towards Vicksburg, Mississippi. He grew increasingly disturbed by the cotton speculators and smugglers. Who were these people they thought? Most of these speculators and smugglers were Jewish, who were crossing Grant's lines for their own monetary benefit. While Grant's army marched deeper into the south in enemy territory as far as Oxford, Mississippi, northern traders followed. The purpose was to profiteer in the cotton trade, driven by the North's consuming need for highly sought-after textile used to make Union tents and uniforms. The Union naval blockade forced southern cotton planters to find alternatives to selling their product. Extensive cotton trade continued between the North and the South. Northern textile mills in New York and New England were dependent on Southern cotton, while Southern plantation owners depended on the trade with the North for their economic survival. The United States government prevented limited trade licensed by the Treasury and the United States Army. Corruption, there's always been corruption. Corruption flourished as unlicensed traders bribed army officers to allow them to buy Southern cotton without a permit. Jewish traders were among those involved in the cotton trade. Some merchants had been active in the cotton business for generations in the South. Others were more recent immigrants to the North. So that's what it was about. It got very interesting. The practice of cotton smuggling infuriated Grant. Criticism of Jewish traders spread throughout the Union Army. But Grant and the cotton trade took on a more personal tone when his father, Jesse Grant, and the Mack brothers, Jewish clothing contractors from Cincinnati, visited Ulysses at the southern base of Oxford, Mississippi. Jesse and Ulysses, father and son, got along well with each other for a couple of days. Ulysses also treated his Jewish guests respectfully. The Mack brothers needed cotton to make Union Army uniforms. Jesse Grant, that's Ulysses' father, had been promised by Mack brothers to receive a quarter of the profits. After Jesse had gotten his son to bestow permits to buy cotton and then be shipped to New York. When Ulysses found out about the business agreement between his father and the Mack brothers, he was livid. Ulysses abruptly sent his father and the Mack brothers packing north on the next train. Ulysses may have felt betrayed to find out his own father was involved in the cotton trade that he despised. As a result of the incident with his father and the Jewish traders, Ulysses, on December 17, 1872, blew his stack and issued General Order Number 11. The order banned not only illegal traders and not only Jewish traders, but, quote, Jews as a class, unquote. From the Military Department of Tennessee, which was composed of parts of Tennessee, Kentucky, Mississippi, and Illinois, Jews out of this place. Immediately after the order was issued, Jews at Holly Springs, Mississippi, Grant's Supplies Depot, was rounded up and forcibly removed. Some Jewish traders were forced to evacuate the area 40 miles on foot. 72 hours after Grant's order was issued, Holly Springs was raided by Confederate Major General Earl Van Dorn and his army of 3,500 Confederate troops. Union communication lines were broken for weeks that resulted in many Jews being spared from potential removal and delayed full enforcement of Grant's order. On December 28, Grant's order went into full force. 30 Jewish families were ordered to leave Paducah, Kentucky, within 24 hours. Jewish families in Paducah were forced to collect their personal belongings, shutter their homes and shops, and board a steamer on the Ohio River. One Jewish resident of Paducah, Cesar Kaskel, a Union loyalist and president of the Paducah Union League Club, was summoned to leave the city. What happened next? A group of Jewish merchants who were expelled from Paducah, Kentucky, led by Cesar J. Kaskel, sent a telegram to President Abraham Lincoln in which they condemned Grant's General Order Number 11 as, quote, the grossest violation of the Constitution and our rights as good citizens under it, unquote. The telegram noted it would, quote, place us, the Jews, as outlaws before the world. We respectfully ask your immediate attention to this enormous outrage on all law and humanity, unquote. Throughout the Union, Jewish groups protested and sent telegrams to the government in Washington, D.C. Kaskel led a delegation to Washington, D.C., arriving on January 3, 1863. In Washington, he conferred with Jewish Republican Adolphus Solomons and a Cincinnati Congressman, John A. Gurley. After meeting with Gurley, he went directly to the White House. Lincoln received the delegation and studied Kaskel's copies of General Order Number 11 and the specific order expelling Kaskel from Paducah. The president, that's Lincoln, told General-in-Chief Henry Wagner Hellicott to have Grant revoke General Order Number 11. Grant finally formally rescinded the order January 17, 1863, within 3 weeks after Lincoln reversed the order. And there's a picture of Cesar Kaskel. On January the 7th, a Jewish delegation that included Rabbi Isaac Meir Weiss, arrived at the White House to offer thanks for his reversal. According to Weiss, Lincoln affirmed that he knew of no distinction between Jew and Gentile, and that he would not allow any citizen to be wronged on account of his place of birth or religious confession. When Grant was elected to be President of the United States in 1868, he tried to correct his mistake through several different actions. Grant appointed a record number of Jewish Americans to govern offices during his 8 years of president. When the Adasis Israel congregation opened its new synagogue in Washington, D.C. in 1876, President Grant attended a three-hour ceremony. Grant also spoke out against Jewish persecution in other countries. While some Jewish people continued to harbor resentment for Grant's actions, many in the community felt that he had become a friend and defender of their rights. When Grant died in July 1885, the Philadelphia Jewish Record exclaimed, quote, "None will mourn his loss more sincerely than the Hebrew or the Jew," unquote. There's a poster. Not everyone was ready to offer forgiveness to Ulysses S. Grant for General Orders No. 11. The cartoonist in Puck magazine said Grant's crying crocodile tears for the persecution of Jewish people in Russia while still believing the spirit of the General 19 laws. So he said he was a big fake. Anyway, Grant appointed more Jews than any other president up at that time. Well, I'm going to talk about no distinction between Jew and Gentile, which is what President Lincoln said to Isaac Weiss. These are the words that the President of the United States said to the leader of the Jewish Reformed Movement. Would you say such words? You agree there's no distinction? The President had never gone to a church. The President was never a member of a church. Who was his father is still being debated. But both possible fathers, Enlow and Lincoln, have Jewish roots. So it's not surprising that Lincoln said there was, quote, no distinction between Jew and Gentile, unquote. There was a huge distinction between the Edomite Judeans and the Hebrew recipients of the covenant that God made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. What Abraham Lincoln said was totally an error. Number one, what distinction was made between the seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman in Genesis 3:15? Number two, what distinction was made when the seed of the Canaanite nations were ordered to be destroyed by the Israelites, by their Lord God, the King of Israel? Number three, what distinction was made between the descendants of Esau when he despised his own birthright and the seed of his twin brother Jacob? Number four, what distinction was made between the blasphemy of them to say they are Judeans and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan? Number five, what distinction was made between the house of Jacob when it was said to be a fire, and the house of Joseph when it's said to be a flame, and the house of Esau was said to be stubble? And they shall kindle in them and devour the house of Esau, and there shall not be any remaining of the house of Esau. Who said those words? For the Lord has spoken it. To say there is no distinction between the Jews and Gentiles means there is no distinction between the descendants of Cain, the Canaanites, Esau with the Imunians or Edomites, and the Ashkenazi with the Israelites, the recipients of the covenants made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. This is exactly what you expect the enemy of our God and his people to believe and teach. The Bible warns us of another gospel. and false teachers. Our enemies, the offspring of the serpent, don't want us to know our heritage, the rock from whence we are hewn, and are therefore destroying the evidence and memories of who we really are. These enemies use people like Abraham, Inlow, or Lincoln to make them the enemies like everyone else, friends. No distinction between Jew and Gentile is their forever lie. Little was said of Lincoln's Jewish friends. But it was during the rule of Lincoln that the Jewish influence began. And under Grant's presidency, it continued as he tried to make up for his order number 11. Cain's people have lived by their wits without scruple up to the present day. There was a time when they were known and marked, and their unbridled evil is such that they have been expelled from country after country by people who knew the Word of God. Today we are taught the unscriptural proverb, quote, all men are created equal, unquote, when most are not in God's creation. Today no nation knows or respects the Word of God. Cain's people have intermixed with our society, perverting education and what they're saying about the schools. Bible teaching, is that what we say about the Judeo-Christian church? Laws, social mores, attitudes, until the once Christian world is depraved. Because we have rejected the absolute of God's unchanging word, our nations are defenseless, and they control us, since they are the head, and now we are the tail. Lincoln was the first president of the United States, or one of the first, to say that Jews and Christians are equal. It is now believed by almost everyone in the world. How can anyone who believes in the Bible that says that the Antichrist and Christians are the same? Intimacy would have been placed in the hearts of the two seed lines. Lincoln was the second Napoleon. Now, you know the secret reason Lincoln is considered as being one of the greatest presidents of all. It's the same reason Hitler is considered to be one of the evilest of all rulers. It's from the Jewish standpoint. Who benefited or hindered the Jews the most? Zionist elites are the single most destructive influence upon both our constitutional liberties and our Christian ideologies in the world. And their influence over abortion politics and politicians reigns supreme. It all started with Abraham Inlow or Abraham Lincoln. May God have mercy on our souls. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel.